Today on Straight Talk Africa, the killing of the Zimbabwean beloved lion Seso by an American dentist sparked international condemnation and outrage. It also raises major concerns about safeguarding Africa's protected wildlife. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. It's Wednesday, August 12th. I am Shaka Sali.
And hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Mariama Diallo, your social media reporter.
Today, we'll talk about safeguarding the African wildlife from poaching and illegal hunting.
And coming up later in our SCA inbox, we'll share your thoughts on our topic through your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments. We'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa. Hope you'll stay with us.
But first, is hunting for profit really necessary to conserve species and habitats by killing animals? My colleague, Paul Sisco, explains.
They are called the Big Five, Africa's most sought-after trophy animals, and hunters pay big money to kill them. It's legal in much of Africa, and some say essential income for maintaining wildlife and habitat. The biggest prize is the African elephant, which can bring more than $60,000. The giant animal is threatened much more by poachers than hunters, who sell ivory and organs, mostly to Chinese markets. According to the World Wildlife Fund, there are some 20,000 southern white rhinos in Africa, a trophy some have paid over $125,000 to kill. Some consider the African buffalo the continent's most dangerous animal. It reportedly kills about 200 people per year. That danger makes it a very sought-after trophy. The animal is in decline, and legally killing one on a private game reserve in southern Africa will bring around $15,000. The leopard is officially labeled as near threatened. Hunters are paying as much as $36,000 to track and kill the big cat. The lion is a majestic creature that roams Africa's vast savannas. It is the most wanted and most profitable trophy. A lion hunt averages about $70,000. The American dentist who killed Zimbabwe's beloved Cecil reportedly paid about $54,000 to track and kill the 13-year-old lion. Lion populations are slowly increasing in southern Africa, critically endangered in West Africa, and rapidly declining in East Africa. It's not disputed that trophy hunters bring funds to communities maintaining wildlife and habitat, but at what cost? As conservationists and politicians debate that question, Zimbabwean President Robert Mugabe on Monday criticized Zimbabweans for failing to protect Cecil. His rebuke coming as officials lift the blanket ban on hunting triggered by Cecil's death. Paul Sisco, VOA News.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. The killing of the beloved lion Seso has prompted governments on the continent, along with the United Nations General Assembly, to tackle the illicit trafficking of wildlife. On July 30th, the UN unanimously adopted a resolution to address the rising scale of poaching and illegal trade of endangered species. And to talk about it is John Scanlon, the Secretary General of Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, or CITES, which is a multilateral treaty to protect endangered plants and animals among governments. He joins us via Skype from Geneva in Switzerland. Good evening, John.
Good evening.
How are you?
Very well, and thank you for inviting me.
You're most welcome. Talk to us about the scale of wildlife illegal hunting or poaching.
Yes, well, we're currently experiencing a surge in the illegal trade in wildlife. We've witnessed this over the past few years. It's occurring at an industrial scale. It's being increasingly driven by transnational organized criminal gangs and, in some cases, rebel militia. We experienced over a period of 3 years the illegal killing of approximately 100,000 African elephants for their ivory. And if we look at the rhino, the white rhino in South Africa alone, there were 13 poached in 2007. That has steadily increased up until last year when we witnessed 1,215 white rhino poached and smuggled in South Africa alone. And we can also look at lesser-known species such as the pangolin, which is a small anteater. It is being illegally traded for its scales and its meat at great scale. The meat of the pangolin in just one seizure was a total of 10 tonnes in weight. That's the equivalent of 130 people of my weight, and these are very small animals. So we are currently witnessing a industrial-scale poaching and smuggling of wildlife, both well-known and lesser-known species. And we're confronting transnational organised criminal gangs and rebel militias, so we've got to up the ante here in how we combat it.
Obviously, given what's going on, one would assume that there must be a huge need, you know, on the ground. We're talking about market forces here. What specific steps are you able to take so as to stop that type of trend?
Yes, I mean, we're confronting a serious crisis here, but the positive side is we are seeing a global collective effort that's underway that involves the UN, involves conventions, in particular CITES, it involves international organisations and the non-government sector who are all working towards the same objective of bringing this illegal trade to an end. We're seeing efforts underway at a political level, and you've just referred to the first ever UN General Assembly resolution specifically on this topic of combating illicit trafficking in wildlife, a very powerful resolution adopted by consensus. We're also seeing greater financing becoming available through a number of bilateral and multilateral donors, as well as philanthropists. But we're also very importantly seeing this effort directed towards the front lines. And when I talk about the front lines, it's the rangers serving in the front lines, but it's also the customs, the inspectors at customs points. It's the police, it's the prosecutors. We're seeing an increasing level of attention being paid to this frontline effort in ensuring that the political and financial resources support that effort. And in particular, we've seen the creation of the International Consortium on Combating Wildlife Crime, a global effort by the CITES Secretariat, Interpol, UN Office of Drugs and Crime, World Customs Organization and the World Bank, who have combined their resources and their capacity to provide coordinated support at a regional and a country level to support frontline efforts to combat this serious crime that's underway.
Now, John, there have been some reports suggesting that a lot of wildlife officials actually are compromised by the fact that they are taking huge bribes. To what extent are you getting the necessary cooperation from governments?
Corruption is an issue that affects many sectors, not just this sector. And we are confronting corruption in combating wildlife crime, just as corruption is being confronted in combating illicit trade in narcotics or any other area. What we've seen through the UN General Assembly resolution, through resolutions of CITES, our convention, and through the work of the UN Office of Drugs and Crime and others, is an acknowledgement that corruption is a serious issue and that we need to work through instruments such as the UN Convention Against Corruption and apply these tools and techniques to stamp out corrupt practices that are fueling this illegal trade, while also recognising the vast majority of people and rangers are doing the right thing, and we need to offer them our full support, ensure that they are properly paid, that if they are killed in the front line in undertaking their work, that their families are able to be supported. So we need to stamp out the corruption for sure, but we also need to recognise the support we need to provide to those honest, hard-working rangers, customs officials, police and prosecutors who need our support to take this on head-on in the front lines.
Well, thank you very much, John, for your insight.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. Now, for more on the conservation of endangered and protected species on the African continent, I am joined by my friend, affectionately called Jungle Jack Hanna. the director emeritus of the Columbus Zoo and Aquarium. He also is the television host of Jack Hanna's Into the Wild and Jack Hanna's Wild Countdown, broadcast here in the United States. He joins us via telephone link up from the U.S. state of Montana. Good afternoon, Jack.
Good afternoon. Thanks for talking to me.
Oh, you're most welcome. How is Susie?
Susie's doing good. She really is. Everybody's doing good. She really is. We're just now working with some snow leopards, and I'm very honored to be on your show.
Well, I have to say that the feeling is mutual, Jack, especially since we last met last year and you promised to come on the show. I look forward someday when you actually come physically right here in Studio 52, Jack.
Well, I'll sure do that this coming year, I promise you.
Thank you very much. Talk to us about your reaction when you heard about Cecil having been killed. How did you react, Jack?
Well, first off, let me congratulate the last two interviewers. Outstanding job on both their parts, both of them. I think the last few words that the gentleman said, the last interviewer, were tremendous because, as we all know, corruption is a very big problem, not just in Africa, but throughout the world. And it all starts from leadership, and I'm not picking sides or anything else. I happen to be going to Africa since 1979. I love Africa. I've been in most every continent in Africa. I have a home in Rwanda, as you well know. And the one thing that the President Kagame doesn't stand for is corruption. Now, some people may disagree with that, but I've seen the results since I've been there and since 1982, living and having a place in Rwanda. However, the corruption is the number one problem. And I love what your previous interviewer said concerning the rangers and those folks. We have in Rwanda now, and I'll get to Cecil in a second, our guerrilla guides up there are now, we're ex-poachers, most of them. And as you said, the rangers, all these guys are doing a great job. And unless they get up to the top, when I say the top, I'm talking the president of these countries, that's where the whole, as you all know, that's where the stuff starts, no matter what it is in any country, whether it's hunting or whether it's anything. And that is an issue in several of the countries where there is big game hunting. And by the way, before we talk about Cecil, I'm not an anti-hunter. No one loves animals more than Jack Hanna and my family. I've dedicated 42 years of my life professionally to saving animals throughout the world in the zoological parks. However, what happened with Cecil is uncalled for. That, even though I don't hunt, that doesn't mean all hunters are bad people. Hunters are very critical. The good Lord above us put down predator-prey relationship on our planet. Predator-prey relationship is what he put here. We as men throughout the world, not just Africa, we've messed that up in certain places. Therefore, there has to be certain controlling, which is hunting, and I'm talking about good hunters. There are bad people in every kind of category throughout life. No matter if it's a hunter, a doctor, a zookeeper, I don't care what it is. We have bad people, but they're very seldom are bad people. Most people are good people. And that's why this one thing with Cecil, it was a terrible thing. But you know something? Like the old saying says, out of something bad, sometimes something good will happen. And those last two guys said it very well. Now the world has been aware of what's happening. The Cecil thing might take it to that next level. As far as trophy hunting, there's no doubt about it. I know some great people that your public listeners will know who did big game hunt. Back in the days, all of Africa was hunting. All of America was hunting. But times have changed. And yes, you know, yes, money does go into these countries. But most of it, I'm sorry to say, it also goes to corruption. There's certain countries, you have great countries in Africa, where your licensing fees, I'm not talking about big game by any way, other animals, goes directly to conservation, not into somebody's pocket. It goes right there. Like in Montana where I live, there's a lot of hunting here. And the good hunters, millions, billions of dollars go right into conservation and help these animals. However, with Cecil, let me start off by saying first, number one, he was an habituated animal. I filmed there in 2011, so I know exactly where it was. I filmed there in 2011. Those researchers do a great job. That's like when an animal is habituated, it does not mean they're tamed. It means you can pull up in your truck, your Jeep, and study those animals and study them for, like they did those animals for years. They studied the lions and stuff for years. They did that. And when they did that, that meant that Cecil and his pride of lions, they were habituated. It means that if you get out of your Jeep, they will kill you. But also, habituation means that that animal, it does not fear you. That's like shooting a cow, by the way. If you go hunt for an habituated animal that people study, you might as well go out and shoot a cow because that lion isn't afraid of that whatever pulls up. And then I understand they drug a piece of animal across the border there of the hunting and non-hunting reserve, and that's not hunting at all. That's called baiting, which is outlawed in most every state in our country of America and also throughout Africa, most countries in Africa, I'm sorry. Then the third thing with Cecil, they used a bow and arrow. Now, the question they said was, could they see the collar around the neck of the lion? Did they see that collar? Well, if you had a rifle, rifles can go 2 miles or whatever. If you had a rifle, I could see where he might not have seen the collar on the lion. However, it was a bow and arrow hunt, so I cannot see how he had missed the collar on the lion. So with all these things said, yes, you can see I'm upset. I'm upset for several reasons. I happen to raise lions for several zoos throughout the country in the 1970s. That's a beautiful place, by the way. This was not some roadside zoo.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm very familiar with lions. And they're a beautiful, that's why they're called the king of beasts. And they are dwindling. In 1947, when I was born, there were, these are rough estimates, by the way, my understanding is there were 400,000 lions in 1947. And when my kids were born in the 1970s, someone said there were 100,000 lions. And today I understand someone told me that there are less than 30,000 lions. So you can see what's happening. For example, in Rwanda, we have Lake Akagera. Right now, after the genocide, we're building that Lake Akagera National Park back up. We've added several animals there. Where there were beautiful animals there for many years, and now we're adding them back. We just added, I think, 6 lions several weeks ago. So an idea for some of these countries that have too many lions, which one of your previous interviewers said, if you have too many lions, then what's the problem with maybe taking some of those too many lions and working with Rwanda or working with other countries that don't have those kind of animals? That might help, again, with controlling these animals in certain ways without hunting. Again, I'm not an anti-hunter, but what happened here with this is uncalled for. As your previous guest said, obviously big trophy hunting it may be increasing, but I really believe that it has been going down as well in certain countries over the years because of the deletion of animals. But I also believe that countries in Africa can work together and take some of these animals that are too many and put them places where there aren't too many. Now, that may sound difficult, and I'm sure it is, but anything in the world is difficult. Obviously, what should happen to the man? That probably is one of your questions you might have asked me.
I see.
I can tell you this right now. In Yellowstone National Park, which is a beautiful park in our country, my understanding is that several years ago, a man shot an elk and put it in his truck and left Yellowstone National Park. My understanding is he paid several thousand dollars in punishment, but also he got, someone told me, 2 to 4 years in prison. Now, I'm not a judge or a jury. I've never met the man, the dentist, that did this. I don't know what kind of man he is. I have no idea. But there should be something going on here. And I'm not saying the man, someone asked me yesterday on a radio interview, they said, Jack, should this man be sent back to Zimbabwe to be punished there? I don't think so myself, knowing the history of Zimbabwe. However, something must be done about this. There's no doubt about that.
I see. Well, I'm afraid time happens not to be a best ally, but we will have to stop right there, Jack. And I would like to thank Jack Hanna, who joined us on the phone from the U.S. state of Montana. Now we'll pause for a short break and would like to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now on the social networking website Twitter. And we are tweeting live. Follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka. And join in on today's discussion with your questions and comments. Don't forget to use the hashtag. And we are still on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa. Become a fan and connect with other friends of the Voice of America. We'll be right back with you. So please, don't go away.
Let's take a look at the most endangered animals in Africa. The Adax, also known as the white antelope, is extremely rare in its native habitat due to unregulated hunting. Today, their numbers are slightly more than 200. The Ethiopian wolf has suffered a severe decline in its habitat. Its overall population is estimated at 400. It's also known as the simian fox or jackal and the only wolf species found in Africa. Mountain gorillas are among Africa's most endangered animals due to a destroyed habitat, poaching, and trade. They live in altitudes as high as 4,000 meters. A 2011 census recorded fewer than 900 mountain gorillas left in the wild. The pygmy hippopotamus is a symbol of the forest of West Africa. Its fate is linked to that of the forest. Therefore, deforestation and hunting is causing its numbers to dwindle down to a mere 1,500. The African wild dog has an estimated count at slightly over 4,000 due to disease and human interference, which includes hunting them for meat.
Like Voice of America on Facebook. Follow VOA on Twitter. Join VOA on our YouTube channel. Like, follow, join VOA. This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. What is your opinion about today's topic? Call us at 202-619-3111. U.S. country code 1. When you call, remember the following. Ask only one question. Keep your comment brief and turn down the volume on your radio or television. Now let's return to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui-Ewart, and welcome back. And today we are talking about safeguarding Africa's wildlife from poaching and illegal hunting. Our distinguished guests are Adam M. Roberts, Chief Executive Officer of Bone Free USA, a national animal advocacy nonprofit organization based here in Washington, D.C., whose mission is to advocate for the protection of animals from cruelty and exploitation. Jimmy L. Mandima, Program Designer Director of Policy Based in the Washington, D.C. offices of the African Wildlife Foundation, the leading international conservation organization. So it focuses on Africa for over the past 50 years. Jamiel hails from Zimbabwe, the land of the Mweni Mutapa. And last but not least, Ben Carter, Executive Director of the Dallas Safari Club, an international non-profit educational conservation and hunter advocacy organization based in Dallas, Texas, with an international membership. He joins us via Skype from Dallas in Texas. Well, gentlemen, I have to say that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you on Straight Talk Africa, in fact, for the first time.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're most welcome.
Thank you for having me.
You're most welcome. Later in the program, we'll give you, the audience, a chance to call and talk with our guests. The number to call is 202-619-3111. The U.S. country code is 1. Let me come to you immediately, Adam. You already heard, of course, what John and Jack had to say. Going back to CISO, do you think, I know that you are not a judge, of course, like the previous two participants, but do you think from what you know so far that this American dentist who killed CISO should be prosecuted in Zimbabwe?
Well, I think if there's going to be a rule of law as it relates to wildlife protection and wildlife conservation, no matter where that happens in the world, we have to observe it and honor it. And if, in fact, it was found that this was an incident of poaching, then this dentist has to be treated as a poacher and apprehended and face the music, so to speak. Mm-hmm. If not, it's going to set up a situation where anyone can think that they can get off scot-free, and that includes all forms of poachers, whether it's ivory poachers who want to kill elephants and profit from their ivory, rhino poachers, or lion poachers. So the bottom line is, if this person did something illegally, obviously we want him to face the law.
What about you, Jamil, your views on this? I know that, of course, this is something that is very near and dear to your heart, because you come from, of course, the great land of Zimbabwe.
Indeed, and I think I recognize that Zimbabwe has got very strict regulations on how hunting should be conducted, and it is clear from the publications to date that the manner in which CISO was killed did not follow those regulations. And in that regard, I strongly believe the rule of law should be followed. The provisions put down by Zimbabwe and the rest of the global community, including the USA, should be followed. And if it means people have got to face the music, they should face it.
Now, talking about CISO, by the way, given that, of course, you come from Zimbabwe, why is it called CISO? Is it by coincidence, or is it perhaps because the man who actually founded that territory named Rhodesia at one time. Sir John Cecil Rhodes himself. Is it because perhaps of Sir John Cecil Rhodes, the man, of course, with the prestigious scholarship at Oxford University?
To be honest, we could speculate anything. I see it as coincidental that it is called Cecil, and then Cecil John Rhodes founded Rhodesia then. And I have not heard any way it's officially documented that it was given that name because of that founding of Rhodesia.
I see.
Yeah.
Now, what about you, Ben Carter, in Dallas? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
What is your take on this? Knowing what you know, do you think that the American dentist should be prosecuted in the courts of the Republic of Zimbabwe?
Well, first of all, I think that what's happened, I don't know what happened in that incident. I don't think any of us do because it showed up on the internet, and that's the only documentation that anyone has. I will say this, our organization, and I personally as a hunter, if in fact illegal or unethical hunting took place, I condemn that, and anyone that does that type of activity should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law.
Let's talk about illegal hunting as a way of benefiting conservation. What is the hard evidence? Where is the hard evidence here? Do you have any empirical evidence?
Well, there's a number of things that you know, hunting varies from country to country as far as the rules and the regulations. It's my understanding that in Zimbabwe, in a number of areas, you can hunt dangerous game at night. You certainly can never hunt in a national park. You cannot bait in a national park and drag the bait outside of the park trying to entice an animal out of the park. But you, in areas you can hunt at night, I'm not really sure about the hunting with a bow, but I think that is legal as well. And if you're hunting over a bait, that is certainly legal as long as you're in an area that you can legally bait. Again, I don't know the facts. I'm not going to assume anything that comes out on the internet is true, because you can put whatever you want on there. I can put on there that you ran over a little old lady yesterday, and all of a sudden your life's going to be miserable. So I'm not going to make any assumptions on the information that comes out on the internet.
Adam, what about that? Any empirical evidence, incontrovertible evidence that in fact legal hunting somewhat benefits conservation, especially in Southern Africa, and in fact, North America?
Yeah, I think there's a popular myth that somehow wildlife commercialization necessarily equates to wildlife conservation. And what Born Free's research has shown over the past few years is that it's simply not the case. That fundamentally, a very small percentage of revenue that comes from hunting activities, like lion hunting, for example, is actually flowing back into local communities. Our research through a group called Economists at Large found that only 3% of revenue from trophy hunts actually flows back into local communities. But perhaps more importantly, we also found that in these countries where hunting is a part of the conservation ethic, it's actually untrue that any money is really being generated as a result. Only 1.8% of tourist revenue actually comes from hunting tourism, which of course by necessity means that more than 98% of tourism revenue is coming from wildlife ecotourism, photographic safaris, and other processes. So what we find is that there's actually more money to be made for these local communities and these nations' economies through ecotourism than it is through hunting.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
Can I comment on that?
Yes, please.
Yeah, I would strongly dispute those facts. I don't know where they came from, but that's not true. And most hunting, the hunting is what really provides the conservation that occurs there, because a person will get a concession and pay a large amount of money for that. In Zimbabwe in particular, over 50% of the wildlife department is funded directly from hunter dollars. It's not from photo tourism. Photo tourism, the fees that photo tourism is charged to give back for operating in conservancies and things like that is minuscule compared to the dollars that come from hunting. And the hunting is what pays the bills in almost every country that there is hunting. Without that, there's no money. People can have all this emotional talk and make themselves feel good about driving around on the bus and taking pictures of the animals that's going to pay for their welfare, when it does not. Over hundreds of millions of dollars are raised that goes directly back to the government to protect wildlife through their own wildlife departments. Most of these countries are very poor. They don't have a large budget to spend on wildlife management. They rely on the hunting model as the funding for the wildlife management that takes place.
I see. Thank you very much. You are tuned in to Straight Talk Africa, and we'll have more of a discussion in a moment. But first, here is Mariama Jaro. Take it away, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. Still to come, we'll reveal some of the outstanding feedback we've received from our audience through social media. But now, here is our letter of the week. Yahya Ahmed Gumel in Jigawa, Nigeria, writes, many African governments have been ravaged by corruption, and that's why anarchy and lawlessness appears to be the order of the day. What's happening to our wildlife is nothing but the extension of this culture under which the culprits are not made to face the wrath of law for their actions. Until we have eliminated this mindset, attempts to save our endangered wildlife will just be a mirage.
I wanted to present music and a side of American culture that is most important to me, that is a part of who I am. They're going to get some incredible performances. That's one of the things I love, bringing these artists in so you can get to see them do what they do. It's soul music, and that's what music is. It's that which comes from the soul.
This is Straight Talk Africa on the Voice of America. Call us now with your questions and comments. The number is 202-619-3111 and the U.S. country code is 1. Call us direct and we'll call you right back. Remember to turn down the volume on your radio or television and keep your comments brief. Now back to Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui Ewart, and welcome back to Straight Talk Africa, live from Washington. Once again, it's time to bring in my colleague and social media reporter, Mariama. Take it away again, Mariama.
Well, thanks, Shaka. The animals most threatened by poaching are elephants and rhinos. Money from the illegal trade, is one of the key sources of finance for terrorism. A global ivory trade ban went into effect in 1989 after Africa's elephant population plunged from 1.2 million to 600,000. But sadly, the illegal trade continues. So far this year, no known animal species went extinct, but many came closer to the brink. This leads us to our question of the week, asking, what more can Africa and the international community do to ensure the safety of endangered and protected wildlife on the continent? Well, thanks for using all our social media platform to communicate to us. Let's begin with a comment from Gatira Raymond Lendiki Molel. That's a very long name, but I think I got it all in, from Arusha in Tanzania, who writes, our leaders should be concerned about how poaching is affecting our tourism sectors. For example, in Tanzania, poaching exists even inside our national parks. I think we should start by banning the illegal ivory trade markets in Asia. Secondly, we have to educate our local people on how to protect their animal and plant life. Lastly, we need to close hunting industries for at least 5 years. Well, another reminder that we are tweeting live today. Use the hashtag VOASaveAfricasWildlife. And if you haven't yet, please follow us at VOAShaka. And speaking of it, let's go to a tweet from Paul T, or Skeptical Paul, as he calls himself, up of Shropshire in the UK, who tweets, target the markets and buyers that the poachers supply. Well, let's take another look at another tweet from an African atheist who says that it shouldn't be just about tourism, but make wildlife more accessible to Africans. And like all Africa's problems, education is key. And one more from Gregory Wall that came through Facebook, but I just tweeted, says that to encourage the development of tourism that caters to more than the big game hunters and high rollers. Well, Shaka and guests, a wide range of interesting points here. Your take.
Very interesting indeed. Jimier, what is your take on that?
Thank you, Shaka. I think the questions being raised by the audience are very pertinent. What I would want to really emphasize is that Africa needs to be proud of its wildlife heritage, and it requires the political buy-in. We have so far started to see that happen, starting from the regional economic communities that have protocols that include intentions to work together and manage the wildlife resource that does not recognize borders. Mm-hmm. And we have seen a continental buy-in now going all the way to the African Union. So what needs to happen is, first of all, for the politicians to be accountable and to now take their talk to action. Mm-hmm. You see people commenting about corruption and not seeing any of the kingpins being taken to be accountable and sentenced. We need, in addition to the talks and all these high-level meetings, to see cases we can refer to and say, we know this leader, this kingpin, this syndicate has been busted and they've been sentenced punitively. That's important for Africa. And then secondly, I think it is high time that African governments give accord to the wildlife value to contribute to the GTB. The differentiator for Africa is wildlife, the iconic species, but often it's taken for granted. Yet the truth of the matter is there are threats from all over, from pressure on land, from the conflict with people, from the modernization of Africa itself. We want wildlife and believe it can have a space and a role to the modernization of Africa as we move forward. And African governments need to ensure that there are adequate resources that are channeled to the wildlife authorities that take care of these resources in the national parks. Mm. We have to make sure that there are rules and regulations of benefit sharing where the communities around these national parks, when wildlife ends up on their land, are able to actually derive benefits, whether it's income come from ecotourism or for whatever sources, but that incentive needs to be there. And then secondly, I think we need to continuously create the awareness through the school system, environmental education. People should know how to behave when they meet wildlife, not just to persecute it, but to say, we know it is valuable because we're actually benefiting from the revenue coming from wildlife. That's are the fundamental things. And then lastly, I would say we need to look at this whole illicit problem across the whole supply chain, from the source, stop the killing, ensuring the eco guards are well equipped, then the transit, the trafficking, deploy the technologies, and ensure that we weed out the corrupt elements. And then lastly, to deal with the market end, the demand. We are in relationship with some of these investors in our countries that are also consumers of these illicit wildlife products. How do we negotiate our investment deals? We should bring in the wildlife issue on the table and make sure we agree on safeguards that do not steal from Africa.
Thank you very much. Mariama, please share some more of our audience reaction.
Well, let's move on to a posting from Mohamed Ahmed Mansour in Monrovia, Liberia, who writes, the increasing wave of cruelty to wildlife in Africa is due to the delay in prosecuting those involved in these heinous acts. Our legal systems are weak. Poaching is barbaric, and it's totally unacceptable and unjustifiable. All those involved in poaching must be arrested and prosecuted. African governments should initiate wildlife conservation programs to protect animals for the sake of nature. Well, one more comment, this time from Tony Abate of Kampala in Uganda, who writes, I think we should consider limiting the use of pesticides. It's a silent degrader of wildlife that is not often talked about. Pesticides disrupt the ecosystem. Well, Shaka, he makes a great point. And as he says, it's not always talked about. Your take.
Very interesting. Ben Kat, are you there? Ben Carter.
Yes, I'm here.
Your reaction, please.
Yeah. Well, I think that we're kind of missing the point, kind of missing what the problem is in this whole discussion. We're talking about select acts against certain animals. The problem that we have is the entire continent of Africa is protein short. You've got a growing population that in not too long will be approaching a billion people. Poaching is rampant every place on the continent. And we're talking about individual cases where we need to be thinking about how can you keep communities together. Most of the poaching that occurs is by the communities that live in these areas. One thing that hunting provides is revenue and income that motivates those people not to poach. Kenya is a prime example. In the mid-70s, some strong anti-hunting groups went into Kenya and lobbied hard through, I'm sure, funding to remove hunting there. At that point in time in the mid-70s, Kenya was the most game-rich country on the continent. We go to today, and they've lost over 75% of the wildlife they have since they banned hunting.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Thanks, Mariama, for bringing us this week's audience reaction.
Well, that will do it for today's social media segment. Just a reminder that we appreciate all the feedback, whether it's in social media form or using other means to communicate to us. Please keep them coming. And if you are a new fan, just drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or post your comment on our Facebook page. Just enter the keywords, Straight Talk Africa. Be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com. Or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa. Also, follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. And now the show is streaming live every Wednesday. So go to VOA Straight Talk Africa television program page on the VOA website. Well, I'm showing you right now. You can watch us also live on your mobile device. So just download the VOA mobile app. Well, there's a little bit of a delay, but it looks like I'm right there. If you can see me, it's going live streaming on your mobile device. So no excuses not to watch Straight Talk Africa. We are everywhere. Now, let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. Next week on Straight Talk Africa, Tanzanian President Jakaya Kikwete's second five-year term is nearly over. On October 25th, the nation's voters head to the polls to choose their leader. An in-depth discussion on the Tanzanian elections is next week, right here on Straight Talk Africa.
Welcome back. And today, of course, we are talking about safeguarding the African wildlife from poaching and illegal hunting. Our distinguished guests are Adam M. Roberts, Chief Executive Officer of Born Free USA, Jemiel Madima, Program Design Director of Policy of the African Wildlife Foundation, and last but not least, Ben Carter, Executive Director of the Dallas Safari Club, who joins us via Skype from Dallas, Texas. Again, gentlemen, I have to say, frankly, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the three of you for the first time on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much.
Our pleasure. Thank you.
You're most welcome. I gather that we have to go to the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers. Good evening, Like from Tanzania. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa.
Yeah, good evening here. I hope it's good afternoon to you guys there.
You got it. You got it, Like. How are you, Ndugu?
Oh, we're doing well. Nice to see you, Shaka, and nice to get involved in this critical subject. I probably point out for our viewers, I want to make it plain and known that I'm actually involved in safari hunting industry for the past 24 years. So, you know, just in case people get my views, they must understand I've been in this industry. I grew in this industry. My kids grew up in this industry. It's something that I've been involved with for a long time. Now, you have to bear with me just in case you think that I'm prejudiced. But before even thinking of me being prejudiced, I should point out that I think, on my view, Mr. Adam Roberts of Born Free Foundation is really prejudiced. But it doesn't matter anyway. Let's go to the point. And, you know, we can talk about, Mr. Shaka, what would you like to ask me, or do you want just me to contribute? Just go ahead. Let me know.
First of all, you heard from a contribution from one of your compatriots that poaching exists in the national parks of Tanzania. If true, to what extent, sincerely, is there what is called political will on the part of the government to stop that habit?
Mr. Saka, Maybe I really hope the American audience will be viewing this. I really hope, and the European audience will be watching this, because, you know, I can tell you, conservation or fighting poaching isn't something easy for an African country. We've got so many things, to, you know, that already are a problem, you know, into our countries. You know, we're dealing with health, we're dealing with education, we're dealing with infrastructure, agriculture, and all that. You must remember, we already have a lot of things. What I can say openly, all my years in this thing, what I've noticed is that the contribution in helping Africa fighting poaching from developed countries is not at par with the poaching itself. I mean, it's minimal. It can't. There is no way an African country can fight poaching. Because, you know, poverty breeds poaching. A lot of guys involved in poaching are involved because of poverty. You know, they're there around the game. And
that's very interesting.
Honestly, I talk to a lot of them because, you know, I grew up here. I was born, bred, you know, grown here. I talk to these guys, and, you know, you really feel bad. I mean, you catch a poacher.
In my
instance, in our areas, you can catch 15 poachers with bicycles, and what they have on it, just a buffalo. How much money are these guys going to make out of it? Negligible, nothing. It
won't
even help
them
anything.
Thank you. Unfortunately, the time happens not to be our best ally, but thank you so much, because, in fact, you raise a very interesting dimension. A reminder that you are tuned in to Straight Talk Africa. Participate in our discussion. Please call us at 202-619-3111. US country code is 1. We'll continue our discussion in a moment, so please, don't go away.
Once again, let's take a look at the most endangered animals in Africa. Due to the poaching of the black rhinoceroses for their horns, only 3,500 of them remain. The species is classified as critically endangered, and 3 subspecies, including the western black rhino, were declared extinct in 2011. As for cheetahs, nearly 14,000 of them exist today. It's known as the fastest land mammal in the world, with some reaching short distance speeds of up to 120 kilometers per hour. Only 22,000 African lions exist today, and their numbers are dwindling due to poisonings, huntings, and loss of habitat. The African elephant is also among the most endangered animals in Africa. It's due to poaching and loss of habitat. There are approximately 700,000 African elephants remaining. Finally, there are a little less than 72,000 African penguins living today. Their decreasing numbers are primarily due to commercial fisheries and oil spills. It's the only penguin that breeds in Africa.
We are able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
If you like today's show, please write and tell us what you think or give us some suggestions. Be sure to tell us what station you're tuned into. Our address, Straight Talk Africa, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue Southwest, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. Or send us an email at africatv@voanews.com. Log on to our website at voaafrica.com. Or post your comments on Facebook. Keywords, Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you very much, Esther Githui Ewart. And of course, this is Straight Talk Africa, coming to you live from Washington. Well, still, of course, with the lifeline of the show, which are the telephone callers, this time from Uganda, the one-time power of Africa. Good evening, Cliff. You're most welcome to Straight Talk Africa. Cliff, can you hear me? I'm afraid we do have some technical difficulties. Probably Cliff's phone might have dropped. In any case, you are right here, gentlemen. You can probably, take it from there. We're talking about, during the break, about perhaps the absence of the political will or the absence of incentives, especially when we're talking about the indigenous communities living around some of these game reserves, national parks. They are poor, and they feel that they have a right to have unfettered access to some of the animals. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think I'd say a few things about some of the recent discussion, both the things that Ben has talked about in relation to Kenya and what the caller talked about in relation to Tanzania. The first is that it's not really any longer the case that it's localized poachers looking for subsistence hunting that's driving the killing of these animals. It's, as John Scanlon said at the beginning of the show, organized crime networks that are looking to make tons of money out of the poaching of wild animals. It's $2,000 a kilo for elephant ivory right now, as much as $60,000 to $90,000 a kilo for rhino horn. So that's really what's driving the poaching. But the interesting thing I find is that when we have a unified perspective across Africa, as opposed to a fight between north and south or east and west, we find that poaching can stop and populations can stabilize. And Ben mentioned earlier the situation in Kenya, where there's no hunting of wild game and somehow there's still a beleaguered wildlife population there. But if you look across the border at Tanzania, where there is and has been for some time legalized big game hunting, you find the problem exists there as well. There are fewer lions being killed every year by trophy hunting because there are fewer lions in Tanzania to be killed. In the Selous ecosystem itself, they've lost 66% of their elephants between 2009 and 2013. So to somehow suggest that it's the absence of trophy hunting in Kenya that's causing poaching, while in Tanzania poaching is completely out of control, is, I think, a grave mistake. It's the global organized crime networks that's driving the poaching, and all commercialization of wildlife contributes to that population decline.
Jimier, of course, it's true. Ben talked about what happened in 1970s, 80s. I remember, of course, seeing that classic symbol of a picture where you had a Dr. Martin Leke with then Kenyan President Daniel Arap Moi burning tons of ivory. Yeah, it may have been significant symbolically, but realistically, in a country where people are poor, really, should they have in fact done that? Or should they perhaps have figured out a way of getting revenue so that they could provide service delivery to their own people?
So here is the issue, Ishaka. It seems ironic to destroy what is seen in courts as an asset, but seeing the rate at which we are losing the elephants, it makes more sense for all of us to rally and stand together until we are able to deal with the loopholes and weaknesses in the system of the legality of trading in any such products. And it is very clear from just the trajectory of declines right now that we're not able to do that. I mean, there were moments when the regulatory fraternity actually provided for those legal trades, but we know what happened. So right now, our position as an organization and with other communities of practice is that let us work together, let those countries that have done a great job to conserve and protect their borders sacrifice for the good of Africa, for the good of the global community, for the good of the species, and we put in place together with their voice systems that will allow them to reconsider what would happen in future generations. So the idea of bans and distractions to simply say, right now, let ivory have no commercial value. So don't stock it up hoping to speculate and make money out of it. There's no value.
Now, Ben, you talked, of course, about the Kenyan experiment, which, of course, very nice on the face of it. But when you think about a game ranger, for example, who is significantly underpaid. He has children who have to go to school. He has members of the family who get sick and they have no unfettered access to medical care and what have you. What incentives does that type of person have if a poacher comes around and compromises him with thousands of shillings?
I want to say I agree with what the conversation is talking about. Organized crime syndicates going in and poaching elephants for the ivory, poaching black rhinos, that is a major problem. doesn't have anything to do with hunting. You know, one thing that a lot of the listeners may not, don't separate it, and when people talk about hunting, they lump hunting as just one category, anyone that kills animals. You've got legal hunting and you've got illegal hunting, and poaching is completely illegal. It's kind of like the difference between going to a bank and taking money out. You can go into the bank and make a withdrawal from your account, or you can go to the bank with a gun in your hand and make a withdrawal by forcing it. And that's what poaching is. We abhor poaching. We do everything we can. One of the reasons why we do support the hunting model is that it does provide, in most of the concessions where people have a block of land that they hunt in, they do their own anti-poaching. We've given many grants for areas that were concessions, as well as other areas in the countries, to provide anti-poaching. Poaching is the biggest crime that is being committed on wildlife in the world, and we would want to do anything we can to get rid of the poaching. It's illegal hunting is what it is, and it's not really hunting. They use all kinds of methods that are not ethical, that are really terrible ways for an animal to die, and we don't support that in any form or fashion. Anyone doing that should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law.
I see. Adam, how do you respond to some who will say, yes, there is, of course, illegal trophy hunting and what have you, but that, in fact, killing an animal, perhaps in their view, may be unethical?
Well, for Born Free's perspective, we believe in compassionate conservation. So we want wildlife to benefit for wildlife's sake, for the sake of the ecosystem. And when you remove some of these predators and some of these large animals out of the ecosystem, you wreak havoc on the ecosystem. And then we also want people to benefit. And from our perspective, you have much more value to local communities from that elephant and the entire elephant herd, grandmothers, mothers, daughters, aunts, cousins, all living together for 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years, bringing ecotourism revenue to that community than one elephant being killed and taken out of that community. But I think Ben and I would agree, and I was glad to hear his remarks, that there is a difference between the legal hunting and the poaching. The problem from my perspective is when the lines get blurred and when legal hunting or commercialization of wildlife gives an avenue to poaching and illegal commercial trade. And so with lions, it's a perfect example. One of the reasons that lions are going extinct right now and that there is such a precipitous decline from 75,000 in 1980 to fewer than 20,000 today is legal hunting. Trophy hunters taking more than 500 lions out of Africa every year, 60% of those American trophy hunters, that is a contributing factor to the decline. So it may not be that those are poachers, but they are legal lion hunters who are contributing to the demise of the species, and that's something that I hope that Ben would agree is something that should stop so that the population can recover.
Wow.
Actually, no, I'd like to comment on that.
Unfortunately, time happens not to be really our best ally. Perhaps next time, if you don't mind, Ben.
Well, all I would say is that wildlife managers should determine what happens, not people that emotionally think that it's wrong.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And on that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Adam M. Roberts, Chief Executive Officer of Born Free USA, Jimier Mandima, Program Design Director of the Policy of the African Wildlife Foundation, and last but not least, Ben Carter, Executive Director of the Dallas Safari Club, who joined us via Skype from Dallas, Texas. Thanks to our affiliate stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Batte. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning in to Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not beta, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.